o'clock in the case of the duty to notify. We'll go on to case 5. 061642, and this is United States versus Daniel Garrity.
May it please the court.
Mr. Schmidt, good morning.
Good morning. I'm Attorney Michael Schmidt, and I represent Daniel Garrity in this appeal. On February 16, 2006, Mr. Garrity argued that a reasonable sentence would be less than the guideline sentence, which exceeded the 20-year minimum. The district court sentenced Mr. Garrity to 262 months, or approximately 22 years. The first issue on this appeal is, was Daniel Garrity's sentence unreasonable and excessive, given the Title 18, Section 3553A sentencing factors and rejected considerations for non-guideline sentence or downward departure. Well, this guideline sentence was subject to a rebuttable presumption of reasonableness in the Seventh Circuit. The sentence is not immune to an argument that it is not reasonable. The standard of review is now whether the sentence is unreasonable. The court did not pass over in silence Mr. Garrity's arguments. The court's rationale, however, is not entirely consistent with 3553A. Under all the circumstances described, it was necessary to depart downward from the guidelines or sentence outside the guidelines in order to meet the mandatory requirements enumerated under 3553A sub 2.
Now, of course, his sentence started at a level 37, even without the additions for drug amount and weapon use, because sadly, the career offender provision applies here. So why would it matter if the court calculated the drug amount incorrectly or applied a weapon enhancement? Do we have to decide whether those decisions were erroneous, given that they do not affect the sentence here?
Well, I think that they may have impact because I can see where this may be coming back on a Rule 35, and we may be underneath the minimum requirements at some point down the road. And the correct quantity, I think, would become relevant. And whether we get to that level or not, I mean, obviously there would be an impact for the firearm as well, but the categorization for the Bureau of Prisons is certainly impacted by the firearm determination as well. But what we have here in terms of a sentence is that we have a sentence that itself does not pass a reasonableness test without a reduction to reduce what otherwise would be an excessive sentence. And it's shown that the behavior is abating without the imposition of incarceration. Draconian incarceration is not necessary, but a reasonable period of incarceration was necessary. He committed his crimes when he was relatively young. The sentence should have been closer to 20 years, as a 47-year-old man does not require the additional time beyond the statutory minimum of 20 years. In formulating a sentence, the history and characteristics of the defendant need to be considered. Mr. Garrity's age and history might suggest a sentence outside the guidelines or subject to the guidelines but lower due to various downward departures. The defendant argued in the sentencing memorandum that there should have been departures because of his criminal history category being overstated, because of the extraordinary abuse that he suffered as a child, and because of his likely isolation in prison would constitute a harsher punishment, as he would not be facing the same type of punishment that the general population would face. The first argument was to depart due to an overstated criminal history category. In Hammond, there were seven factors that were looked at: age of the prior offenses, the defendant's age at the time of the prior offenses, the defendant's alcohol and drug use, the circumstances of the prior offenses, the length of the prior sentences, the circumstances of the defendant's life. Looking at all those factors, they all really point to Mr. Garrity in terms of a case where we have an overstatement of criminal history category. And we may be looking at a career criminal here, but I think it affects the analysis in terms of the overall reasonableness of the sentence that's being imposed. Mr. Gary was 47 years old at the time of this crime, but the age of the crimes used to calculate his career criminal status was about 20 years old. We were looking at one crime was committed 23 years ago, another one 18 years ago, and the last one was 16 years ago, and all were only months away from being beyond the 15-year period. So it was a very, very close call. Then we looked at his age, and of course, he is a rather old offender at 47. We then looked to the circumstances of these offenses as it is affected by alcohol and drug use. And every one of these crimes, you go through the PSR and you look at virtually every one of his crimes, it's hard to find any crime in that PSR that wasn't affected by drugs and alcohol.
Would it shock you to know that 85% of all crimes involve drugs?
No. No, it wouldn't. This is just one of seven factors, but I'm pointing out that all seven factors truly apply to Mr. Garrity. And then we learned that he saw treatment, and while he has not been successful in all his attempts at treatment, he was successful in the Nexus treatment that he underwent that was documented in the PSR. The circumstances of the prior offense, Mr. Garrity's crimes in the past decade have been less violent and less serious drug cases, especially as time is going on, with the exception, of course, of the instant offense. His criminal history includes drunk driving and misdemeanor battery convictions. The length of the prior sentences. In some cases, he was actually paroled early because he was not perceived as being an overly dangerous defendant. When the court looks at all those factors, the closeness and proximity of the early offenses, which really earned him the career criminal status, it becomes a very difficult call to say that Mr. Garrity should be subjected to such a lengthy sentence and that his criminal history should be used to increase his sentence so dramatically.
Would you think a criminal history should be considered?
I think it should be considered, Your Honor.
Well, I think that, and it's considered as to whether you should or not increase it. If you have no criminal history, you don't increase it.
I understand.
This man has a repeat over and over and over again.
He does have a number of offenses. There's no doubt about that. But there's room in our system under Hammond for...
There's room where?
Under the Hammond decision.
Yes.
To look at that criminal history and make a determination whether it overstates his real dangerousness. And I think that he is a poster child to say that it does in his instance, at least in this at this point in his life.
How about the other people's lives that he has implicated and ruined?
Why
do we consider?
I think that we can look at his young son and the fact that he'll be left without a father and his wife who's got cancer, and I think that it is a sad situation he was leading to them by committing this offense. But I think that we have to look at all the factors, and when we're looking at a 47-year-old man and we're looking at putting him away for 20 years, the extra 2 years above the mandatory minimum is gratuitous. It's not necessary. It's not reasonable. But in terms of the drug quantities, we're looking at a situation where the United States saw that this defendant was really not capable of making a second delivery and that drug quantity shouldn't be held against him. The firearm situation was one in which... I'm sorry, how much time do I have? I'm looking at my...
Gosh, a minute.
1 minute, that's what I thought.
Can you save that for a rebuttal?
I'll just touch on it briefly. In terms of the firearm, we're looking at a situation where they were saying that a squeegee in the afternoon should be perceived as a gun. And a squeegee doesn't smell like a gun, doesn't have this oily smell, doesn't have a hole for a bullet to come out, doesn't have a sight on it, doesn't have anything that resembles a weapon. And it's rather a shame that we would look to categorize Mr. Garrity as we will as a felon in this matter, or to increase his sentence, even if there was a Rule 35 that would be subsequently made, because there was perhaps a squeegee in the vehicle, and Mr. Garrity made some unwise comments that... Thank you.
You can finish your thought.
Well, his comments, which amount to more boasting, unfortunately put him in a situation where he's looking at both a BOP status that would be undesirable and a longer sentence at a point where it's already quite lengthy. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Mr. Gonzalez.
Good morning, members of the court. May it please the court. My name is Mario Gonzalez. I'm an assistant United States attorney from Milwaukee. I'm here to ask this court to affirm the sentence issued in the district court. The sentence carries with it a presumption of reasonableness. In this case, the court handed down a 262-month sentence, even though the at the bottom of the guideline range, the defendant faced a mandatory minimum of 240 months. This is a classic example of the application of the career offender guideline. Mr. Garrity, prior to appearing before Judge Clavert, had multiple felony and misdemeanor convictions. The judge took a lot of the argument presented by Mr. Schmidt and Mr. Garrity into consideration, but ultimately made the determination that based upon the prior lengthy criminal history that the 262-month sentence at the bottom of the guideline range was reasonable, and I would ask this court to affirm that sentence.
Mr. Gonzalez, the first transaction was supposed to be for 4.5 ounces of crack, but it appears that only 3.5 ounces were delivered. Is the record going to explain that discrepancy?
As the record doesn't explain the discrepancy, the unfortunately, in many drug transactions, what happens is the supplier generally will short the person that they're selling the drugs to. That is, sell them, give them less than what they've bargained for, even though the transaction was negotiated for 4.5 ounces. For whatever reason, the supplier only supplied the 3.5 ounces. There was a subsequent phone call to make that additional amount up at some future date, but that never did take place. Unless there are any further questions, the government.
Did Judge Clavert consider Garrity's personal history at all? Did he give it any weight?
It was presented to him. He clearly could see the defendant's infant child in the courtroom. He heard from the defendant as to a lot of the personal circumstances that were, in his mind, mitigating. I don't believe in the record he mentioned it, but he did go through the 3553 factors and felt that this was an appropriate sentence.
Thank you, Mr. Gonzalez. You used your time, but I'll give you a minute if you feel you have something you really want to add.
You don't have to use it.
No, but you may.
Okay, well, thank you. I guess I would like to just point out in terms of the firearm that we're relying on a confidential informant who would have some reason to indicate that there may have been a firearm or that he had some reason to be a firearm. There was an incentive for that defendant to point to the possibility of a firearm. When one has a firearm, the sentence would be enhanced and the confidential informant would get more credit for such a situation. Law enforcement would also want to take every precaution and I don't think it's unreasonable from their perspective to assert that, but I think there's a difference between the reasonableness of them asserting that in order to advance their own agendas and the reasonable perception that there was, in fact, a firearm, because there wasn't any firearm.
Mr. Schmidt, were you appointed?
Yes, I was, Your Honor.
You have the sincere thanks of the court for the really fine job that you have done for your...
Well, thank you, Your Honor.
We're going to call case number 6 and...